Welcome back to another edition of the Unofficial Guide to Disney Dish podcast with Jim Hale, as I, Len Testa, and I have a special treat for you this week. Jim was in Orlando a couple days ago and got a complete walkthrough of the menu at the Leaky Cauldron over at Diagon Alley. And in order to talk about that food and all of the delicious things about it, I bring to you, ladies and gentlemen, the mighty Jim Hill. Jim, how's it going?
Other than needing several exosuits, I'm fine.
So not only does Universal love you, but they show you that love by giving you food, which, by the way, is the only way to actually show love.
Well, there you go. So, you know, the irony was, because this was a tasting, but at the same time, this was an interview. I ended up, you know, seated in between Chef Stephen Jason, who is he's the executive chef in charge of all the restaurants at the Universal Orlando Resort, and he's been a big, big partner, obviously with the Harry Potter projects. And then on the other side was Rick Florell, and Rick is really sort of the king of Harry Potter for Universal. I mean, for example, he brought to the meal his dog-eared copies of Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone and Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. And the interesting thing of these dog-eared copies is they had hundreds of colored tabs sticking out of them. And it turns out that what Rick had done is he'd actually read each of these books 3.5 times with an eye toward, did a character drink a beverage? Did a character have a meal? Did a character handle an item that could possibly be turned into a piece of merchandise?
Really? And so he's like the keeper of the canon, but for food and merch.
And canon is exactly right. I mean, for example, at this restaurant, they're going to serve Gilly Water. All right. And not Poland Springs, not Zephyr Hill, Gilly Water.
Gilly, and G-I-L-L.
And then just throw water at the end of that. And it turns out that Gilly Water is only mentioned twice in the entire, the 7 Harry Potter books. You know, I think it's in the 3rd book that Professor McGonagall is at the Three Broomsticks with Hagrid, Flitwick, and Cornelius Fudge, Ministry of Magic, and she has, a gilly water. And then in the 7th book, Luna Lovegood has a gilly water, I think at the wedding that's held at the Burrow for the Weasleys.
So twice.
But again, she puts a cocktail onion in hers. But that's the thing. Rick knows this. I mean, just knows this stuff backwards and forwards. So how many
pages of each book's like what, 900 pages, something crazy?
Well, no. She starts
with a 50-page book.
To give her credit, J.K. Rowling, the first book isn't, the behemoth that the other ones are. But yeah, toward the end, they were 800 and 900 pages long.
So there's seven of them. So he's probably read like what, 4,000 pages?
Easily.
3 times.
But you got to understand, when it comes to, again, Universal prides itself on being great stewards of the Harry Potter brand. But and in fact, that's how they sold themselves to both Warner Brothers, the folks who made the movies, and the Blair Group, who in turn are the folks who handle the literary rights, the literary side of things for J.K. Rowling. And what they sold them is like, look, we're going to make these parks, these, what we do with Hogsmeade and Diagon Alley. This is authenticity. It's all about being authentic. So, for example, with the Leaky Cauldron, it's all about not only being faithful to British pub culture, but being authentic to the movies, being authentic to the look of the films. But at the same time, the authenticity comes up through the menu. Now that said, people who have experienced Hogsmeade are going to notice some differences with Diagon Alley, but they have to. I mean, just right.
So in terms of setting, or in terms of process, or both?
Well, I both actually. In terms of setting, Hogsmeade Village is supposed to be this 800-year-old village in the Scottish Highlands. So at the Three Broomsticks, you get a different sort of service because of that. Whereas Diagon Alley, was supposedly built in the 1500s. It's this wizarding market that's hidden behind London. So it's more of an urban setting. And so and that coupled with the fact that they decided, particularly with Diagon Alley, that the Hogsmeade Village really does draw more references from the books than it does from the movies. And this time around, it's kind of swapped backwards. It's more about bringing the world that you saw the movies to life.
Oh, wow.
Which of course makes sense because this is Universal Studios Florida, the park that celebrates movies.
So, oh, wow.
You know,
did they consciously decide that, or it kind of worked out that way?
No, Rick was talking about how this time around it was more about bringing the movies to life. But at the same time, there were other lessons that they learned. From the Three Broomsticks, this time around, there is no queuing up outside in the hot Florida sun. The queue for the Three Broomsticks is inside. It's indoors and air-conditioned. Truth be told, that there's really two queue spaces because it's kind of divided in the middle by a glass case where, you know how you go to a restaurant and there's that plastic food so you can look at what you're supposedly ordering?
Yeah, the demonstration plates or whatever, yeah.
That's what this is going to have. Also, in a really neat kind of a touch, because, again, a pub, particularly a pub from the 1500s, the menu, you know, it's not a printed menu. It's not a, you know, in fact, well, it's a video menu that's disguised as a chalkboard. But of course, this being a wizard's pub, that means the chalkboard magically erases itself and then rewrites, you know, the other part of the menu while you're standing there.
Really? So it's like a video.
Yeah, that's it exactly.
But it looks like a chalkboard.
Okay. So anyway, now you, because you wrote the unofficial guide to British theme parks, you experienced the food. More to the point, you probably went into a pub or two.
I think I might have gone in one. Yes.
There you go. But then Rick pointed this out. Now maybe you can validate this. The thing is, when you go into a pub, you know, you're allowed to sit down at any table, and you can stay there for as long as you'd like, but you could also probably starve to death because, you know.
Yes, I know exactly what you're going to say. It's true.
You know.
It's true.
All right. Because you could see waitresses, barmaids going back and forth. But they won't serve you. Eventually, someone will take pity on you and say, you have to go order your food at the bar.
Yes.
All right, so that's what you have to do at the Leaky Cauldron. And in this case, what happens is that you finally come to the top of the queue, and you're looking out at the bar, that all of the cash registers are lined up around the bar, and there's great detail behind them of,
oh, really?
Of taps and barrels and that sort of thing. So you're waved in.
So the cashiers are technically at the bar.
At the bar.
Oh,
so,
of course. Okay. All right.
Okay. So you go up there. You order your drinks and you place your food order. The interesting thing is at this point, they hand you your drinks. They put them on a tray. They then direct you to another cast member sort of standing at the entrance to the actual dining room. They walk you to a table, but it's at this point you look down and you notice that on your tray is a candle. And, you know, that this is actually the cool part. The candle is how the people out back who are making your food know where to bring it. So,
oh, does it have like a number on it or?
Yeah, now mind you, the one I was shown and they used that day, did just have sort of a number sticking up out of it, but they were kind of alluding to, I don't know if this is going to be the equivalent of the magic rose at Beauty and the Beast.
That's where I was going with that, yeah. So there's like an RFID tracker in the...
This is the problem. They were in rehearsal, you know, while we were there. And so they just had a candle with a number sticking up. And more to the point, we're the only ones eating in the restaurant.
Yeah,
if they can't find us, it's a problem.
Okay. But you think they'll eventually do the magic RFID thing, which...
That seems to be the way they're leaning. But more to the point, you know, you got to remember this is Universal. They don't like reinventing the wheel.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the Disney thing of let's put as much technology here as possible. Though, that said, what's really interesting about the food ordering process for this place is that they're using, at the registers, the kitchen is getting your order in real time. I mean, they haven't even finished the transaction and the kitchen is getting information about what you want, and they're working, already turning and burning on this.
Wow. Oh, so it's being submitted literally as they're typing it into the register.
That's it, exactly.
Okay, but that saves a couple of minutes. That's interesting.
Well, and that's actually part of you know, one of the things they went into the Leaky Cauldron was that they wanted you to enjoy your meal. They did, you know, for example, when you go to the Three Broomsticks and you've got your food, you then have to go to the Great Wall of Condiments and get your salt, get your sauce, get your plastic silverware, all
the
that
stuff in the back to the left, right? And yeah, and that's a pain because you're carrying a tray full of food, you've got drinks, you know.
That's it, exactly. So to save just that little bit of time, and you know, sometimes it can, if you're for a dad schlepping all that food and trying to get stuff for your whole family, it can be a minute and a half of your time in the restaurant just grabbing that crud. There's a caddy in the middle of every table that has, you know, the plastic silverware, all the condiments, napkins. So, you know, you sit down, you start drinking, you pass out your drinks, you're starting to enjoy yourself, and then the food shows up.
Wow, nice.
Yep. Now, again, because this is a ridiculously high-tech kitchen, I mean, they're totally, you know how restaurants normally use, you know, paper tickets? This is entirely paperless back there.
Nice.
More to the point, they've got the kitchen set up. This is one of the things Steve Jason's proudest of. It's a sort of a two-tier table system out back so that, for example, when the Leaky Cauldron is serving breakfast but lunch is about to begin, they'll start, you know, they'll be finishing out breakfast and but prepping lunch. So, I mean, if you're, you know, the last person through the door getting breakfast, your stuff arrives immediately. If you're the first person in the door getting lunch, there's no lag. I mean, it just bang changes to the new menu.
Wow.
So
how much prep are they doing ahead of time with the food? Is it all? Well, I guess we'll talk about when we get to the individual dishes because I guess some stuff you can.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, the Universal has a giant commissary kitchen right there on property, and Steve was, you know, very open about how they behave there. You know, just the notion. I mean, for example. You know, they serve food at the Leaky Cauldron that features broccoli florets, but there's also three or four other restaurants within that same park mm-hmm. that serve broccoli florets. Rather than have the kitchen handle that, they do the chopping, the sizing, all that at the commissary kitchen. It's then, you know, delivered to the Leaky Cauldron, but it's not cooked till the moment that, you know, the order comes out from out back, and then it gets thrown into the steamer and then, you know, right out to you. So.
So they do the mise en place somewhere else, but then they assemble it. Okay.
That's good. Now, this is a big restaurant, Len, that they're right now, I mean, as of this moment, there are 240 seats in the place. But again, you have to understand they're still in the middle of constructing this thing. So they're going to try to put some more additional seats in. But I mean, as we were there doing this test meal, there's this poor man installing an animated, you know, a video screen of the, you know, Sirius Black Wanted poster and just, you know, I felt for him because we were in the place where he needed to get at.
he's like, could you hold onto this coax?
Okay. Yeah, you know, it's sort of like, I'm so sorry. But yeah.
Either of you gentlemen have experienced splicing fiber optic cable together.
Yeah, not going to work. Okay. Wow. So,
all right, now, so on to the food.
On to the food. Now, let me stress here, it's a comprehensive menu, but it's not a huge menu. Again, this is pub food.
Okay, so what, 6, 7, 8 things per?
Yeah,
it's not the Rainforest Cafe menu.
No, not at all. I mean, just enough items to give diversity and you know, give, you know, guests the choices that they want. But at the same time, it's not so big that you're going to confuse the guests or overwhelm them. More to the point, you know, it makes it that much easier for the kitchen to deliver this food fast.
Yeah.
So let's start with breakfast.
The most important meal of the day.
And you'll love this, Len, because they're going to, just like over the Three Broomsticks, they're going to have English breakfast. So,
oh, really? That's fantastic.
Yeah, baked beans, blood sausage. Hey, kids, let's start the day with a indifferent look. And you know,
if I never eat that again. So I told you my experience with English food right on the British theme parks book. I lost 6 pounds. I lost on an expense account. I lost 6 pounds with someone else buying my food. Yeah, so everything is runny. Everywhere I went, the eggs were runny, the tomatoes were runny, the baked beans were runny, the fruit.
Even,
was right.
The silverware. I mean, just how can they do
the toast?
That?
It was amazing. I was like, how? How are you doing this? What is this? What sort of witchcraft is this? Yeah, so I ended up – that's actually the toast was fine, but I actually ended up just eating croissants.
Wow.
Yeah. Although I will say, when I, you know, that was like in hotels. So, I mean, the hotel standard English breakfast. Actually, even the poached eggs were sort of poached in oil, so even they were runny. But I went, and you know, we're getting off on a tangent, but I actually went to this one hotel that was next door to a dairy. And so they made their own yogurt on site, and that was delicious. So not all British food. Anyway, so go ahead. Breakfast, most important meal of the day.
Okay. And then it's interesting you mentioned croissant because one of the other options, traditional breakfast. So you get your eggs, your meat, your breakfast potatoes, and a nice warm croissant. They're also going to do a pancake breakfast because kids love that.
Yep.
But you mentioned healthier. So one of the other things they're doing there, it's a deliberately a lighter breakfast. So you've got a warm apple oatmeal flan that's served with some fresh fruit, some grapes, and also, again, you know, that's what a coincidence, some nice fresh yogurt.
An oatmeal flan. So a flan is like a custard.
That's it exactly. But
a warm apple oatmeal custard.
Yep.
Dude, if you set that on fire, it's a dessert. I mean.
Yes.
You pour some brandy over it. I'm just saying we're done, right?
Well, you know, let's be honest here. What's a pancake? All right, it's a cake. And then you pour syrup over it. All right, you know, just sort of, you know, breakfast creeps, you know, dessert creeps into breakfast a lot.
Wow. So warm apple oatmeal flan. When, that came with what?
Fresh fruit and some nice fresh yogurt.
That sounds delicious.
And well, but for those of you who want something a little, I mean, still healthy, but a little more substantial, they're also going to serve a pasty.
A pasty, yes.
I've been saying these wrong for years. It's not a pasty.
Yeah, you know, pasty is just a completely different sort of entertainment experience.
Yeah, I know, but it's just, I've been embarrassed. This whole time I've been ordering it wrong, so it's like pasty describes me, not the, not
pasty.
The,
yeah.
Yeah, that's pasty.
And you have to hold the A, it's pasty.
Pasty. Okay, so
a pasty is is essentially like a calzone, right?
Yeah,
it's a meal inside of sealed inside of bread. Or
yeah, it's a biscuit dough, and in this case, it's going to be filled with eggs, leeks, mushrooms, and a little cheese. So that's the breakfast menu.
So it's like a spinach omelet inside of with your bread.
That's exactly.
Oh, that's handy. You can walk around with that if you needed to.
But that's the entire breakfast menu right there. Okay. Now, it's creeping up on 11. It's time to change things out. So, first thing out of the gate for lunch, and this is something it builds on the success of the Great Feast over at the Three Broomsticks. They wanted that sharing meal for the family, but at the same time, they wanted to do something different, something more appropriate for a pub setting. So what they decided to do was a plowman's platter.
No. Oh, really? Like a plowman's lunch?
There you go. So
these are delicious, by the way. It's one of my favorite lunches to eat in the UK.
Really?
Okay. Yes.
So it's a cold platter.
Yep.
And again, you know, because this is when it comes to the Wizarding World, it's all about authenticity. The three cheeses that are served with this thing are all coming from the UK. You know, so what is a Colby? A Leicester, and I want to say it's a blue cheese. I'm blanking the name. But it also comes with an apple. We're going to be turning into the Monty Python sketch shortly, aren't we?
All right, okay.
Oh, the cat's eating it. So
three cheeses. So typically a plowman's platter, a plowman's lunch is a hearty bread, a piece of cheese, a piece of fruit, and something sweet at the end, like raisins or something like that. Which technically is another fruit, but okay, you get my point.
No,
so this has three cheeses. This is
yep. And,
wow.
Well, your fruit component is an apple and beet salad. For your protein, they're doing a traditional Scotch egg. They're going to be serving a British favorite, Branston pickle relish, and that comes with a nice a piece of peasant bread that's been cut into four quarters. And then there's a field green salad with some roasted tomatoes and a little dressing on the side for the salad.
This is for one person?
Well, no, this is a sharing platter.
Oh, okay.
And I think
it
can be sized up. I mean, it's like you can do it for two, you can do it for four, you can do it for six. The idea is, like the Great Feast platter over the Three Broomsticks, this can be sized to meet the demands and the appetites of your group. But now, this is where it gets interesting, because, again, this is trying to do British food, but with the same time understanding these are American tourists who, you know, are worried about cholesterol and you know, again, everybody who knows the themed entertainment industry knows what happens when you serve heavy food in Central Florida. You know, I mean, that
steps out in the sun and have heart attacks and die.
That's right.
So wait. The Scotch egg has got to be a Scotch egg is an egg wrapped in bacon, breaded, deep fried. Yep.
Yeah, they go. In this case, they do. They double down on it's not bacon, it's sausage meat, so it's even worse. But to keep it lighter and healthier, the universal version of the Scotch egg is flash fried. It's not in the deep fryer for very long, and the breading's deliberately thin. And what they try to point out is like, look, if you break this meal down into its components, the protein, you've got protein in the eggs and the cheese, you've got carbs in the bread, you got the vegetables and your apple, beet, and your greens. So in theory, you squint at this the right way, it's a balanced meal. You know, and more to the point, it's a nice alternative to a hot lunch, and given the temperatures between May and October, this is actually kind of a smart way to go if you're looking to refuel and get back out into the park.
Yeah, it's true. So it's not like you're eating like a 12-ounce piece of steak, which would be a lot of protein to then walk out into the sun with. So you've got an egg, which you're going to divide probably among two people.
Yep.
Get some cheese. Yeah, that's okay. I totally get that. Okay, cool.
Okay.
All right. So the rest of the menu is also British?
Well, yeah, but at the same time, it's British by way of Harry Potter. I mean, for example, you can't just have split pea soup. All right, this split pea soup actually takes its inspiration from Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. There's a moment in that, both the book and the movie, where Harry's been picked up by the night bus and he ends up meeting with Cornelius Fudge, the Minister of Magic, actually at the Leaky Cauldron. And, this is, I don't know if you've seen this movie, but this is right after Harry has accidentally blown up his Aunt Marge, you know, which it supposedly is going to get him thrown out of school. And Fudge is trying to comfort Harry. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, would you like some pea soup? You know, and it's like,
sure.
But the thing is that on the way over on the bus, the shrunken head that's dangling from the rearview mirror of the night bus warns Harry, you know, if you have the pea soup, be sure to eat the soup before it eats you. So, but as soon as they read that, it's like, oh, we gotta do this. We gotta do this.
Split pea soup. Okay. All right.
You know, and circling back on the Scotch eggs for a moment, they realize because, again, that's different, that's unique. There's people who are just going to want to try that on its own. So they're actually, it's a standalone menu item, but they're going to pair it with a spring summertime salad with a light vinaigrette dressing. So, but now, okay, it's a pub, you know, it's England, so you got to do fish and chips. But again, this is where, again, you get into how the people have done this, you know, that their passions. I mean, Chef Stephen Jason is a fanatic for fresh fish. I mean, which is why if you go to Universal and you get the cod, this stuff is flown in from Alaska. I mean, what you're eating today, 2 days ago, was swimming around the boat with the Bering Strait, you know.
Wow.
And he's equally crazy about the vegetables. They try.
So they fly the fish in.
Yeah. In fact,
so it's not coming frozen off of a truck.
No. In fact, that was the thing. He every so often, folks will come into to Steve Jason's office and try to sell him on flash frozen fish and that sort of thing. And he's done the thing where they blindfold him and they mix up the pieces of fish and he can still identify which one is the frozen.
I mean, really?
He believes that strongly. And Rick actually made this great joke to the effect of, you know, just, you know, it's really sad in, you know, when you've reached a point in your life where you're jealous of the frequent flyer miles fish have, you know, you know, where I could go. Oh,
yeah, right. 7,000 miles per, every day, 7,000 miles, probably 7,000 miles. Wow.
Yeah, but okay. And now, again.
So fish and chips is good.
Fish and chips is good. And of course, you know, you can't do pub food without doing pies. And they decided they'd do two different types of pies. So there's a fisherman's pie, which again, tying in with Steve's passion here. So three different kinds of fish in it. There's some beautiful Scottish salmon, some of the cod we were just talking about, and a little shrimp tossed in.
Oh, sure.
And then it's topped with a crust of potatoes, and they mix some peas in. They also do a cottage pie, which is 100% beef. And for interesting side note for you folks who keep tabs on these things, a cottage pie is all beef, whereas if you're doing a shepherd's pie, that's actually beef with a little lamb tossed in, which, again, I'm an idiot. I did all these years. It's like, well, you're a shepherd, cheap. Oh, you know.
I didn't know that.
No, they don't need the design, but it's like shepherd's pie, lamb. Well, of course, you know. You know, can't be that good a shepherd if you let the lamb wander away and get put in the pie.
Well, the thing about it is, it's like you know, doctors bury their mistakes.
Ah, shepherds, there you go.
Shepherds eat their mistakes.
There we go. Okay, so now, again, because you're trying to be healthful here, so they pair it up with a salad. It's also accompanied with a roasted plum tomato where, you know, and if you're looking to replicate this thing at home, folks, what they do is they do cut a tomato in half, throw a little olive oil in, a little garlic, season it, and then you bake it in a slow oven. So, you know, again, that's the thing of I get more recipes from this tasting. And ironically, because I'm interviewing these guys, everybody else is eating. I'm the one with the microphone going back and forth. You know, at the end of the, I think I got like three, you know, spoonfuls of some things, and everyone else walked away like, that's the greatest meal I ever had. It's like, you know, I got a great interview.
Give me some crackers on the way out.
There we go.
Please. Water to wash them down.
There you go. All right. So,
we'll have your time soon enough. All right. So Plowman's platter, fish and chips, seafood pie, cottage pie.
Cottage pie. We also.
So traditional British food is?
Yeah. Just on the off chance, for example, that you can't decide. They actually have a mini pie platter where you'll get both a cottage pie and fisherman's pie. Also, this is, they're serving kids meals that will do these mini pies. So again, if your child wants a fisherman pie or the cottage pie, or if you're somebody who's dieting and, you know, this is also going to be served with greens and, or fries, fruit.
Doing like a pie sampler.
That's exactly.
And it's the size of a kid's meal pie.
Yep. That's the idea.
Genius.
Oh. Okay. Now we get to the sandwiches. We're going to do, it's a pub, so you got to have bangers. So that's the sausage, which is going to be in this sort of peasant style baguette. You can get your chips from like fish and chips, and they top the banger with some caramelized onions, and you get another oven roasted potato on the side. Then it's a little cabbage, special sauce, and it's out the door.
Bangers and mash, okay.
Okay, well, that's actually a separate dish.
Oh, really?
Bangers and mash is coming.
Oh, okay.
But this is a banger in a roll.
Sandwich in a roll. Okay, so a sausage and onions, okay.
Okay, you've got a grilled chicken sandwich, which has some nice English Colby cheese. Some applewood smoked bacon, and again, whatever the special sauce is. Then they really wanted to do all really authentic British stuff. So, for example, Steve Jason loved and demanded that they put toad in the hole in the menu because
– Toad in the hole?
Toad in the hole.
Which is?
It's Yorkshire pudding, which, again, if you don't know what Yorkshire pudding is, it's a pudding that's basically cooked with some beef renderings baked into it. Gives it a nice flavor. And what you do as it's baking is you jam, a sausage that you've sliced in half down into the dough. So that's the toad in the hole. And then you cover that with an onion gravy. But yeah, Steve, at the very first restaurant he ever worked at, this was the thing that they had him prepping over and over and over again.
Oh, so it's just the thing you do in his sleep.
There you go. So it's like, we're doing this. And again, as you mentioned, they've got bangers and mash, which comes with minted peas, and I have no idea what that means.
Minted or mashed?
Minted.
Minted.
Minted peas. So,
minted. I mean, I get.
If anybody wants to write in and explain to Len and I how you mint a pea, you know, just, boy, that sounds wrong.
I mean, usually they're mashed.
I understand, but they were. I mean, trust me. I looked at these things. They weren't mashed. They were dented. So it's like I don't know if somebody sits backstage with an awl and just hammers one pea at a time. but it's like, please, somebody tell us how you mint a pea. All right.
So this is a mix of, just some pretty traditional British pub fare, with some stretches of things.
Well, again, they wanted, it's important to stress here, Universal is not forcing people to eat healthily. If you come up to the counter and you look at, you know, the, and says the salad, it's you, and you say, hey, I want chips with that or I want mashed potato. The serving staff will, of course, you know, be happy to swap that out for you. What they're doing by selling it with a side salad is they just want to try to make the meal a little bit better balanced.
Well, plus, it's Philly too. By the way, when we say chips, we're really not, we're not talking about potato chips. We're talking about French fries.
That's it, exactly.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, so we finish stuff, we finish off with a classic stew. So you've got beef, lamb with some root vegetables like turnips and carrots all cooked up.
In a stew.
In a stew. But of course, you know, again, because you're trying to keep your menu small, what they're doing is they're taking the peasant bread that you've used for the plowman's platter, hollowing it out. That's a bread bowl. And again, like everything here, it's served with a nice light salad. So, hang on. I've got it here. The cheese, the blue cheese is a Dunlop blue cheese. So.
Okay, cool. So it's a blue. Yeah, typically one of the British cheeses is always a blue in there.
Okay.
Oh, so that means so what's the relish that goes with that?
It's a Colby, it's Cranston pickle relish. Cranston pickle relish. It's evidently.
What's the sweet to go
with? Oh, Branston. Branston. Well, actually, the apple beet salad is supposed to
be. Okay. So yeah, typically you pair a strong blue cheese with something sweet or, something that'll take the edge off the blue.
There you go. Well, speaking of sweet, there are three desserts offered at the Leaky Cauldron. We have a crenachan. It's a Scottish dish. It's basically, sort of a Scottish version of trifle. It's multiple layers of pudding and jam. In this case, it's got a little oat, mixed into it. The jam component is, raspberry, and again, what's kind of interesting about this, it's a whiskey-flavored pudding, but no alcohol.
So far, I like every single thing that you've said so far. I love raspberries. I like whiskey. I like...
pull them out of the vat.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So how do they... So whiskey without alcohol.
Yeah.
It sounds like a sin, but all right. What?
What can I tell you?
Who's the guy that's taking the alcohol out of the? Oh, I guess they cook it off. I was going to say it's because of sort of complicated filtration process. They probably burn it off.
Or more to the point, how do I get that job?
Exactly.
So, all right. Jumping ahead here, we also have a sticky toffee pudding. It's sticky. Basically a bread pudding served warm, butterscotch sauce drizzled on top of it that's got some pecans mixed in, and then they throw a scoop of vanilla ice cream on that.
Is there a guy like jabbing your leg with the insulin pen when you
Oh yeah, and
that
in
sounds
fact,
delicious.
You know, and then well, actually, the supposedly the dessert. This is the one that Steve is most excited about. Is a potted. It's a chocolate potted cream. You know those kind of mason jars with the hinge. This is how it's served. A little tiny, you know, potted chocolate. It's got a little black cherry sauce drizzled off the top, and sort of a pickled. Black cherry right in the middle and
stewed. Probably not pickled, probably stewed.
Oh, that's stewed. Okay, but just it was so funny to watch people around the table eat it, and it was just, you know, they take the one bite and then
Was it just a flurry of mouths and spoons at that point?
Oh my god, it was, you know, keep your hands and feet away from their mouths. It was just very scary. All right, now we've talked a little bit about the beverages, the gilly water. But the thing, what's interesting about the gilly water is that there, you know, just sort of stepping outside of the Leaky Cauldron for a moment here, there's going to be another shop in the Carket Market area of, Diagon Alley. It's going to be called Eternal's Elixir of Refreshment. And the gimmick is you can take your gilly water over to the store. And they will sell you an elixir to pour into your gilly water, which is a draught of peace, a babbling beverage, and again, this one's a little scary. The elixir to induce euphoria, and then fire protection. But these are all powders that you pour in that change the color, that fizz, you know, that sort of thing. So you
pour these into your beverage.
You pour these into your beverage.
So you buy like a bottle of water, is that it?
You buy a bottle of water and then you go over and
It's like the little what's the name of the lemonade company that what a Starbucks Via looks like, right?
Yep, that's exactly.
It's like that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so you poured into your bottle of water? Yes. Okay, cool.
But the thing is, just to sort of slide away from the food for a moment, because nobody's talked about this yet. they're going to have out there the Gringotts Wizarding Bank Exchange.
Gringotts Wizarding Bank Exchange, okay.
All right, which means that when you go up there with your dollars or pounds or whatever currency you have with you, you hand it to the nice, and again, there's going to be a universal employee dressed as a goblin in a cage who will then change your money out for wizarding dollars, the actual currency of the wizarding world.
Ah, so it's like Disney dollars.
That's it, exactly. So it's, and it's like, you know, you're not getting enough of my money, you have to do this now.
Yeah, really.
You know, but they'll probably be officially announcing that in a couple of days yet. All right. Now, jumping back to the beverages. So we have, again, more kid-friendly than not. We've got Otter's Fizzy Orange, which, again, drawing from props that were made from the movie. This was a product that was supposedly on sale at Weasley's Wizard Wheezes. I can never say that name right.
Okay. Fizzy Orange.
Yeah, fizzy orange.
What was the flavor of the Gillies, by the way?
That's the sad part, Len. It doesn't have a flavor. It's bottled water. That's one of the reasons why they're sending you around to the elixir place to
got it. Okay. I missed that.
Add a flavor. All right. So the Otter's Fizzy Orange is just a light orange drink, with a rim of, orange sugar and cinnamon flavor. And it's tasty.
Ooh, orange and cinnamon.
Yep.
And cinnamon.
It actually works.
I can see that, yeah.
Okay. Jumping ahead, we've got tongue-tying lemon squash, and they're making this with real lemons. I saw the lemon squisher out back. They wouldn't tell me what the tongue-tying element was, but that was nice.
Ooh, probably citric acid.
And then we have fishy green ale. They brought over this clear plastic sort of Dixie cup with a giant black straw sticking out of it because they wanted me to see what was in the bottom. And... So it's this minty.
Did you want to see what was in the bottom, Jim?
Well, I was a little concerned at first because again, it's this sort of green fluid, and you could see something at the bottom. You know,
most appetizing description.
A giant black straw. So you take a sip.
Fluid black straw. Okay, go
ahead.
Okay,
and it's actually a refreshing mint. Beverage, but at the same time, you feel that there's something round in your mouth that you sucked up the straw, and it's a gelatin ball that has blueberry flavoring inside, and it basically just the when you suck that into your mouth, it breaks open, and so the blueberry mixes with the mint. It's really tart but very refreshing.
You can get like squicked out when you were using the straw and felt something come up the straw.
I
spit it out and go. Do you drink bubble tea at all?
My daughter does. She really enjoys it. In fact, Steve was talking about how he loves the idea of bubble tea. He just hates the taste of tapioca.
Tapioca, exactly. That's why I can't stand it. Tapioca is just
So it's just sort of like this is that idea. And the idea is these little balls that you're sucking up are fish eggs. So I think what fishy green ale is going to be the drink you order and dare your friends to drink.
The Beverly of
there you go. Baldur, there you right. go. Okay.
Right, so
now
they've got a water. They've got a mint water. They've got orange. They've got lemon.
Yep. And now, of course, this being a park that celebrates the UK, you got to have tea. So they decided, but again, it's Florida. How do we do this? And eventually they came across a reference, from the work that Stuart Craig, the production designer for Harry Potter, had done. They had propped out, a bar in one of the things. And one of the things in the background said Peachtree Fizzing Tea.
Peachtree Fizzing Tea.
Tea. That's it, exactly. So,
this was a prop in the movie. They had to create a bottle or something.
Yep.
Smart.
And so, and in fact, what's going to be fun about this one, if you order it behind the bar, they're actually going to have a tap for this thing that's shaped like a peach tree. So,
funny.
All right. So anyway, jumping ahead here, this is the Wizarding World. They're going to sell you butterbeer in all of its sizes, shapes, and colors.
Frozen, not frozen.
There you go.
Vapor.
Remember from our friend Mr. Kaversky, who went over and tasted the warm Butterbeer last December. Evidently, that's coming back as a seasonal offering, but again, only when it's cold and
cold. Yeah, I can see when it's cool, but it during the summer, it leaves like a film on your mouth. It's
Yeah. I actually got a couple of stories about Butterbeer we'll do at the end here.
Right.
But, you know, beware of the film, Len. Okay, so much the same as how the Howard Hogshead Tavern sells the Hogshead Brew, Scottish ale that's very successful and, you know, people really enjoy. The Leaky Cauldron's going to have two beers of its own that will only be sold there.
That's my next question. They sell alcohol? Yeah, okay.
Yep. So you've got a Wizard's Brew, which is a sweet stout, and then there's the Dragon Scale Red Ale, which is going to be a light lager. And again, only places that these are going to be sold at the Leaky Cauldron, and man, they put time into this thing. I mean, just for example, with Wizard's Brew, they had to go through 12 different formulas before they finally found a stout that they liked, and they've trade secreted it. So
they're not buying this. They're not slapping a label on Guinness and calling it Dragon's Ale.
Nope. They're actually
brewing their own beer.
Yeah, in fact, that's actually the same thing with Hogshead Brew. I mean, this is
They're brewing their own beer.
Yeah.
Wow. That might be the most impressive thing you've said so far.
Well, okay.
I mean, a lot can go wrong with... brewing beer is an art, right? I mean, it's a craft.
Yes, my father tried it sometime during the 1960s, and you always knew that something had gone wrong when trying to walk out to the family room and hit the puddle.
Yeah.
it's like, Dad, your beer blew up again!
Yeah.
So after, again, this meal that I didn't really get to eat anything at, but I got some great stories.
So this was Leaky Cauldron, right? Is there anything else? That's it for Leaky Cauldron, right?
So it's now, hey, we're all going to go up the street to Florian Fortescue's Ice Cream Parlor. Again, this is a construction site, Len. So as we walk in, we walk into Florian's, there is literally a guy on his hands and knees painting the walls buttercream. You know, or a buttercream color. He's not actually using buttercream.
Oh, that would have been so good. Although that's more German fairy tale than fair enough.
Yes, the snozzberries taste like snozzberries.
The snozzberries taste like snozzberries.
There we go. But anyway, again, just like with the menu at the Leaky Cauldron, the ice cream flavors, when they can be, are inspired by moments from the book and for moments when the characters actually went to Florian's. I mean, for example, they sell a chocolate and raspberry ice cream that's actually keys off of Harry's first visit to Diagon Alley in Sorcerer's Stone. Hagrid actually goes to get him this while he's, you know, Harry's shopping, I think, for his school uniforms. Meanwhile, there's a strawberry and peanut butter ice cream they sell, and that's keys off of Chamber of Secrets. Ron and Harry go to get ice cream because they just can't bring themselves to get in line and hang out with, you know, their friends who are trying to get Gilderoy Lockhart's autographs. But The other flavors, I mean, you go with your standard vanilla and chocolate because that's what kids like. But then you do things that are very English, like clotted cream, which is sort of a vanilla ice cream married to a citrus sorbet. It's really very tasty. You've got a...
Really?
Yep.
Ice cream mixed with sorbet. Oh, so like almost like orangesicle.
Yeah, but lighter.
Lighter orange?
Yep. You've got a sticky toffee pudding, which was very nice. Likewise, a salted caramel brownie. Then there were the weird ones like Earl Grey and lavender, and that was the noise I made when they described it. I said, "Why would you go with that flavor? Well, Earl Grey, it's English. You know, we're in the UK.
And lavender. Well, the thing is that I mean, the big thing with tea flavored things is they're tannic, right? They're sort of bitter.
But
that's not the flavor you typically want with ice cream. I mean, you could do tart, like, you know, raspberry ice cream is tart.
Yep.
But a tea-flavored ice cream to me is again, you could just unless they figured out how to get rid of the tannins.
It was a surprisingly light taste.
Was it really?
Yeah.
And the lavender didn't smell too, didn't taste perfect?
No, I mean, that was the thing. It was one of these things where you kept waiting for stronger flavors and they weren't there. But again, nice, light. On the other hand...
What color is it?
It's sort of a light purple.
Okay.
Bordering on gray.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay.
Okay, then you have your chocolate chili, which Starts off as this really sweet, wonderful chocolate, and then the chili undertones come in, and it's just, I think this is really going to be the ice cream that you get for the family member who's been annoying you for the vacation. Just here's your chocolate, enjoy.
Oh, so it's hot.
Yes, yes. Comes in and bites you in about at the end.
Because chili is, you can add a little bit of cayenne or chili powder to chocolate, like mm-hmm. to hot chocolate. Just a tiny bit. It does actually enhance the flavor.
It does. But at the same time,
a lot is probably not a good thing.
Well, it was light enough that it wasn't so overwhelming, but at the same time, it did definitely had a kick. It definitely had a bite. Mm. And then, of course, you have the what you'd expect. They do an orange marmalade. But, the whole time they're handing me these tiny spoons of ice cream, there's this poor man behind the counter frantically trying to get a soft serve machine to work. And finally, he gets it going, and, this stuff oozes out, and they put it in a cup, and they hand it to me, and it's like, try this. It's like, what is this? Go try it. They take a bite, and then it's like, oh, you're kidding me. It's like, nope. Butterbeer ice cream.
Ice cream.
So it's picture sort of vanilla soft serve.
Hold on, wait. Is anyone else hear angels in the background? Is that just me? you're singing, right?
I have to admit.
I hear a trumpet. You hear a trumpet? I hear a trumpet.
I have to admit, I did turn to them when I'm tasting this stuff. It's like, Jesus, like somebody made a new flavor of crack. I mean, this is really going to be what makes the line there. But basically, it's kind of a vanilla soft serve with butterbeer flavoring sort of swirled around the vanilla, and at the same time with the topping that again, the thing that you have to keep wiping off your face.
They got they turned the foam into an ice cream?
Yeah. I mean, it's all there. All of the flavors that you like about butterbeer are part of this.
There's some mad food scientist in the back of Universal.
Well, it's funny you say that, because Rick is the guy who basically is the mad food scientist. I mean, Rick, for example, does a monthly test on butterbeer. I mean, he will go over to the Three Broomsticks. He asks for three glasses to be poured out. He then walks outside to the outside patio of the Three Broomsticks that sort of looks into islands. Yeah. And he places them out in the sun and then walks like 3 or 4 feet away and matches up a color swab.
Wow.
If they've got the color wrong, yeah. He goes back and they have to start tweaking it. On the other hand, Rick is ridiculously protective of butterbeer. I mean, for example, when they got it up out of the ground, and everybody signed off on it, they actually set up two different companies. One does the actual butterbeer, the beverage at the bottom of the glass, is another entirely separate company that does the foam at the top. And neither of them knows the ingredients for the other piece. I mean,
together the atomic bomb.
That's it exactly. Plutonium made in New Jersey, casing made in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
On the other hand, he won't even let the folks at Universal out on City Walk, who are constantly like, oh man, we'd love Wizard's Brew, or we'd love to be able to sell butterbeer. And it's like, no, the only place you can get this beverage is in the Wizarding World. I mean, you can't even get it in islands other than, or soon at Universal Studios Florida, other than inside of Diagon Alley Hogsmeade Village. That's it. That's the only place. In fact, when they went out, when they announced the Wizarding World coming to Florida, again, Tom Williams, the head of the company, is like, it would really be nice as a photo op to have people, lifting up glasses of butterbeer, toasting that this was going to happen. So Rick, again, just because he's so protective of it, personally flew the ingredients out for the event, personally put together all of the glasses of butterbeer that were used for this photo op. And as soon as he'd filled all the glasses, he poured everything that was left over down the sewer. So it's like, this was, again, this butterbeer only exists in the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. And for this one event, for the photo op, there was a little Wizarding World set up. But after
Okay.
Yeah, so nobody in Universal Hollywood is getting any till 2016. But, I mean, even, the fact, there's one final little funny story about Rick that, the Tom Schroeder, the head of PR for Universal, there was a big convention in Cincinnati, where it was going to be all these travel writers and these tour operators and that sort of thing. And so they're doing a big event for the Universal Orlando Resort. And so Tom goes to Rick's office and says, you know, it would really be great if at this event we could give everybody a souvenir mug and serve them some butter beer. And the way, you know, Tom finishes out the story. Now, I'm not going to say that somebody threw a book at my head, you know, or that it was a Harry Potter book filled with colorful tabs that listed where the drinks and the merchandise and the food.
I'm telling you, I can't say it happened.
I can't say it happened, but yeah. So that's, I guess, wow. What I enjoy so much about this particular, you know, this thing with Universal is to meet the people who are doing the work and to realize how passionate they are, and more to the point, how hard they are working to make this authentic, both to the English pub food, to the fans of the film. I mean, you're going to walk into this. The scale of the interior of the Leaky Cauldron. I mean, this thing goes up to 3-4 stories. Really? You know, it's just giant vaulted space. And you know, the funny thing is that, you know, that again, it's only 240 seats and however many
four
more they can.
Four stories tall, 240 seats.
Right. Yeah.
Wow.
And the one thing is they're fairly confident that they're going to be able to turn tables quickly, as beautiful as the environment is, as highly detailed it is. I mean, for example, when you hear Leaky Cauldron, there is a 6-foot-tall cauldron sitting, again, with an obvious crack in it, sitting in a giant fireplace at the, you know, it's the centerpiece of the room. And, you know, the funny thing is right behind this old-fashioned, this is where you cook food, is the super high-tech kitchen where, you know, all your food is going to come running right out. But they're still confident, in fact, because of, you know, that people will eat there and then hurry back out because of everything else there is to see.
There's so much other stuff to see,
So, well, anyway, that's the long-winded version of, you know, what there is at the Leaky Cauldron.
And the opening date, Jim, is?
Well, all right. Press event is the 16th through the 20th. Over the meal, I asked again, you know, the press people who were there. So we're opening, and, you know, summer.
Summer.
So,
well, they've got guaranteed packages now for June 29th. So we know that it's not later than that.
Yeah, that's the.
But it might be June 28th.
You've nailed it, Lynn. I think that's, you know, and the problem is it's such a huge undertaking. It's such a huge set. Just again, training people to be in this space.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, again, when we came out of Florian's, they were walking team members through an orientation, and they were only going to begin the sort of play testing of how to operate the stores on the 29th and the 30th. So they're really just getting underway on that stuff.
In a couple of weeks at least.
Yeah. But at the same time, while I was there, there was a camera crew and they were going to be spending the next 10 days shooting the commercials to help, you know, promote Diagon Alley.
The funny thing is, so I just called to try and get hotel reservations in Universal for the third week of June. And I don't think they actually need to film any commercials because all the hotels I wanted to stay at were sold out. So there was no availability. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the commercials. I imagine that sometime around the end of June, early July, it's just going to be a frenzy down there. So it'll be a fun summer for Universal, though. Good for them.
Yeah, good for them.
Cool. Well, Jim, thanks very much for this. Is anyone hungry besides me right now?
I have to admit. Damn it, I want a meal!
We just talked about food for an hour. This has been great. All right, folks, this is Len Testa. You've been listening to the Unofficial Guide Disney Dish Podcast with Jim Hill. Please go onto iTunes and rate our show and leave us notes on what you'd like to hear next. For Jim, this is Len. We will see you on the next show.
Take care, folks.